This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And a good morning to you, Charlie.
And good morning to you, too.
Well, here we are.
It's a warm, summery day.
It's a beautiful day out there, and I can just imagine you're going to be suggesting all sorts of reasons for folks to get out and start digging around the garden.
Well, huh? At least get some of those weeds pulled if you can. I know it's dry, a lot of drought going on. So, yeah, remember to water things that need to be watered, like edibles.
In the early morning best or later in the evening.
Early morning best, yeah.
Not in the high sun.
No, not at all. You're just wasting the water at noon. Yeah. It's evaporating
faster. And that's best for the plants, too. It burns the plants, doesn't it? If you get...
That's a great myth, actually.
That
if you wet plants at high noon, you'll burn them. Because, I mean, sometimes we do see evidence of little yellow spots after we've watered on a hot day. And we said the whole theory was that the sun is beating down onto those droplets of water, turning them into like miniature magnifying glasses burning the tissue of the leaves. But I don't think it's that. It's actually, I think it's more of a hot, cold thing. So the leaves are really, really hot on the, you know, hot day. You get out there with that cold water, start splashing it around.
Shock.
Exactly.
Oh.
Yeah, because you know why we know it's not burning from those little miniature magnifying glasses? Because think about how many times it's poured rain and you're outside and the sun comes out. 2 seconds after the rain shower goes through, and everything's wet, and the sun is out, and nothing gets burned.
So Mother Nature teaches us, hey, don't be stupid.
Yeah, it's more the cold. Yeah. So yeah, avoid watering and getting things wet at midday. It's just, like I said, a waste of water.
Okay. Let me just quickly give the phone numbers
That's
here.
Right. That's, you do have a job.
You know, you folks want to get a hold of Charlie, by all, you need these. In Toronto, call 416-360-0740. Then anywhere in the province, it's toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Our little mantra goes this way: call early, call often. One question per caller. Patrolman Proctor pulls you over and gives you a ticket.
You got to be on the ball for this one.
That's right.
You know how sneaky some of these callers can be.
Oh, my gosh. They are getting good.
They are.
And if you happen to be a first-time caller, please let Sebastian know and... That's what you'll hear before you hit the airwaves, get your garden
or
wings.
Or Faz. I think we've got Faz on the board.
Is Faz on the board now?
Yep.
Oh, how you doing, Faz?
Yeah, good. So let Faz know.
All righty. Very good. My little efforts are complete.
Job's done. You can go.
I can go sit back and
back
relax now.
And curl up in the corner. okay, a couple things. One is big thank you to Joan Love. She has sent a special perennial lobelia plant with Frank to the studio for me. So thank you. I'm looking forward to putting that in my garden. Blue flowering. Just need a nice moist spot. I know Joan has irrigation, so she's got a pretty moist garden. Mine, not so much. So I'll have to find a nice low-lying area to tuck that in. One more thing from last week. Jane phoned from Seagrave, and she was asking about St. John's wort, which is a plant, and the fact that there's beetles that eat the St. John's wort, which is Chrysolina beetles. Okay, turns out that yes, indeed, these beetles were imported. They were imported specifically to eat St. John's wort because so much St. John's wort grows in pasture land, and grazing animals would chow down on the St. John's wort, and it has a lot of active ingredients in it that can actually be toxic at high levels.
Oh, detrimental then.
Yes, exactly. It is a plant with very long history of medicinal uses.
Mm-hmm.
So people do want to grow it and do various things, make tinctures and teas, etc., with St. John's wort. But it's very hard to do because, of course, these beetles arrive and they chow it all down. So it is. Yeah, I didn't know that. It's a pretty interesting little story here. So the active ingredient that the animals were having problems with is called hypericin. And so what do you do? Because unfortunately, as I noted here, the defoliation of the St. John's wort by the beetles is most severe in the week before flowering and continues during maximum bloom. So the time when the flowers are harvested for medicinal use. So there you are wanting to harvest. Meanwhile, the beetles are ahead of you and they're chewing the plant faster than you can harvest it. So it's been considered a very successful program in the sense that the beetles are doing a fine job. But for those of you that want to actually grow St. John's wort and have issues with the beetles rolling in, you're going to have to use a protection device like a row cover, a floating row cover. Okay. So that's that really fine gauze, almost like a netting over the plants early in the season. Sun and moisture can get through, but of course beetles can't. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be, Jane, as far as I know, the only way you're going to successfully grow and harvest any St. John's wort.
Okay. Did you have some notes you wanted to pass along there?
Always a few things going on. The annual Bob Cajun Horticultural Society's garden tour is today. It's a tour and tea. So lots going on in Bob Cajun. Tickets are available from all kinds of retailers. Look for information under www.bobcajunhorticulture.com. Remember, Thursdays are the fun days at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. Every Thursday evening all summer, tons going on. There's food, drink, music, dance, tours.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, gift shop. And it's such a beautiful place to be. It's all outside, of course. So check out the TBG Thursday evenings. This coming Thursday, it's all about flamenco music.
All right.
Dance and music.
And when we step out of the studio today, we are going to be blasted with the sound of the cars
sounds,
going not too far from us. Honda Indy, of
is
course.
Literally in our backyard here. Yes. It's loud and smelly.
You got it. All righty. Well, we'll be back in just moments here with all sorts of wonderful calls, including one from Peter in Southampton. We're coming to you next, Peter. Stand by. The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, according to my monitor here in the studio, Cassie is on the line, but where are you from, Cassie?
Coburg. I'm from Coburg.
Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charlie and Frank. First of all, happy belated anniversary.
Ah, thank you.
Okay, I couldn't get through last time. And Merry Christmas.
There you are.
It's 10 years
and counting.
It's about
my Christmas characters.
Okay.
It's full of blossoms.
Oh, lovely.
Now, what I like to know is, how do I keep the soil? Do I keep it moist and watered, and do I fertilize it now?
Okay, so these are great questions. And it's funny that your Christmas cactus is blooming now. It's
just full of blossom. I counted at least 20.
You know, it's Christmas in July sometimes.
Yeah, right.
There we are. So what the bottom line is, no, you do not want to keep it moist, but you don't want to let it dry out quite as much as we let it dry out when it's not blooming. So feel the soil. Wait until the surface of the soil starts to dry out. It'll still have a little bit of sponginess to the soil in the pot, but it won't be, desert-like conditions, but at the same time, it will feel dry to the touch. That's the time to water.
Well, I had it left dry and ignored it, and then the chipmunks started digging in it, so...
Little
bums,
devils.
Yeah. And in terms of fertilizing, yes. When a plant is flowering, it is what we would consider it's in an active growth phase, and fertilizer will support that active growth phase.
Uh-huh.
So it's perfect to be fertilizing the Christmas cactus now because of the fact that it's flowering.
Uh-huh.
Once it's finished flowering, of course, no more fertilizer until you begin to see buds again. So that might be 6 months from now, might be a year from now, whenever that is. Consider fertilizing again then. But for now, do it for sure now.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
And Merry Christmas. All right. Oh, hey, Sophie in Etobicoke. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding red currant shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few that are about 5 years old,
mm-hmm.
and for the past couple of years, lots of fruit every year. The fruit falls off before it ripens, about 95% of it. What can I do to prevent it for next year, if anything?
Well, you know, reminds me of sometimes, I don't think of currant so much doing this, many of the fruit trees will do what's called self-pruning because they set too much fruit and the plant can't actually support all that fruit. And so plants will sometimes just drop unripe fruit and keep a smaller percentage. And that, of course, will go on to be quite yummy and edible. But I've never heard of currants doing that. So that's a little different. So you see those unripe currants on the ground beneath the shrub?
Lots. I cover it with some mesh in case the birds get it, but no birds. We have lots of birds, but I mean, they don't just come near it.
Yeah, and you do get lots of fruit because you do need the insects to do the pollination. So when do you first cover once you start to see the fruit, or you cover?
When I see it starting to fall off.
Oh, okay.
Like right on top.
Right. And it's a very light net.
It's not
causing any kind of stress on the plant?
No.
But it's actually sitting on the plant?
Stakes. My husband puts the stakes on top of it. It's
elevated.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to leave that with me. Why? The only reason I can, and it's not lacking for moisture, it's getting enough sun.
Definitely not. Lots of sun, lots of moisture.
Those are the important things. And you need insect pollination, so you can't cover till the pollination occurs.
Right.
Then the covering is great because you protect from the birds.
Right.
But why it would defruit, I'm not sure. So I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Sophie, that first mystery of the morning by Detective...
Detective Dobbins, she's on it.
The case.
Speaking of, this is a great little segue because I did receive an email from Cambridge, Ontario. Ann Dawson writes to say that she's been growing red currants for years and years, has had wonderful experience growing them, but suddenly in the last couple of years, the currants are disappearing. Before she can get to them, they're gone. And they're not dropping to the ground, like Sophie was just saying. They're ripening and everything's looking good. She goes to bed at night, wakes up the next morning, and they're stripped bare. My limited experience I did on this, or limited research, she mentions it's definitely not deer doing it. It's blackbirds. Blackbirds love red currants.
I thought maybe she was looking at the next door neighbor
who might come over. You never know. Out there picking the currants in the dark, right, with a little headlamp on. Blackbirds are sneaky little buggers, and they will, at night, go in there and just strip your red currants. And if you're listening, consider doing what Sophie's husband set up for her, which is some stakes and some netting, and protect those currants from those birds, and you should have lots of fruit.
Excellent. Okay, let me repeat the phone numbers there. We've got a line open right now at 416-360-0740. That's in Toronto. And then anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Out to Oshawa we go, Charlie. And there's Philip on the line. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning.
I just have a couple quick questions about, flocks.
Actually, you're
tall flock.
Uh-huh.
Philip, we have a lot of them. They've done great for years, occasionally on some summers, powdery mildew. Mm-hmm. The last few years, though, they've been getting yellowed, spotty leaves, stunted growth, twisted leaves. Mm. I've found tiny little yellow things that hop around. I found some spider mites. Mm-hmm. In the spring, I've turned all the soil over them, and then sprayed them with soap with ammonia. But nothing seems to work, and it just seems to get worse every year. And strangely, I did transplant some to somebody else's, or to our church actually. Mm-hmm. And they're fine there.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, it's something. All right, so, yes, all that twisted growth, the yellowing, a couple of things are going on. One is, before powdery mildew is evident to our eyes, which is that powder on the surface of the leaves, the precursor to that powdery look is all the spores arriving, doing their thing. We can't see this. It's all microscopic, but there will be those yellow spots. You will see yellow edges. You'll see twisting and gnarliness on the plants. And that's just an indication that the powdery mildew is there and it's proceeding to germinate and to grow and devastate the plants. Now, most perennials, not all, but most perennials will really do far better with some digging and some dividing. And that's what happened when you dug a chunk out, took it to the church.
I've done it a lot, yeah, and really thinned them out so they're not touching each other.
Good.
And it only affects some.
Yeah, some varieties are...
Strangely, the powdery mildew, we've had it many times over the years, but nothing like this. It's just this devastating.
Hmm. And these plants are not lacking for water.
Nope.
Okay. And when you were doing this a certain amount of digging and dividing, were you supplementing the soil with some good organic material?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, I put compost on it all the time. I wondered because some of them, they turn kind of yellowy. So I tried, liquid fertilizer. I think maybe they're low in iron or something. And I don't know. It just seems to get worse every year. Mm. I don't know why.
Well, there's many, many varieties of phlox in different colors, different heights.
Yeah.
Some of the older varieties, ones that we've kind of passed down, we got them from our moms and our grandmoms. Those older varieties have been around forever, but they do tend to be very, very susceptible to some of the issues that phlox suffer from, like mildews.
Well, strangely, they seem to be doing the best.
Is that right?
The
yeah.
new variegated ones, the ones that are really suffering.
Yeah, variegated will. Variegated, you've got to remember, any variegated plant is a selection for its ornamental value, and it's often not as tough as the original. And the originals obviously were green.
So you think it's more mildew likely than insects?
More likely. Yep. Yep.
Is there anything you can do to...
Other than aphids. Aphids, you can find them on any plant.
No, is there anything you can do for... I don't have aphids, but is there anything you can do for mildew?
It sounds like you've done a lot of the right things. You ensure that there's good air circulation, good sun. Obviously, you want minimum 6 hours of sunshine daily on those plants. Spacing them out for that air and sun is important. There are some fungicides... garden sulfur, there's liquid sulfur, there's also copper sulfate in a powdered form that can be used as a way to prevent the powdery mildew. You'll never eradicate the mildew, but you can prevent it by using these things in advance of when you expect the mildew to arrive.
We had it many times in the past, and it was sort of irritating, looked a little bit. Nothing like this. This just seems to devastate them. They finally turn brown, and some of the plants have actually disappeared.
Yeah, they just get crispy.
Oh, yeah.
Consider moving. Taking some chunks early in the spring to other parts of the garden, maybe, as a way to, try and move them around a bit.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems nothing works.
Oh, my.
Yeah, moving them to another yard, and I don't see what's wrong with this. Anyhow, okay.
No, keep them on your property.
Kindly.
Okay, Philip. Thank you very much for joining us. Good looking, even cloudy, but hey, it's still a good looking day. It's a Saturday. Yes, indeed. Out to Lindsay. There's Sandra on the line. Good morning, Sandra.
Hi.
Good morning.
I used to have an Italian bellflower or Star of Bethlehem, and I don't have it anymore, and I wondered if there was anywhere I could get it in the Lindsay Peterborough area, or are there seeds?
Good question. Italian bellflower or Star of Bethlehem. I can do a quick web search for you when we go to a commercial break and let you know if I can see anything.
Okay, I just didn't know if there was seeds or not. I had my plant for about 20 years, and I just kind of lost it.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. I mean, some plants last for hundreds of years, like peonies, for example, and other plants just start to dwindle down and shrivel up and don't come back.
Delphiniums are a good example. Bethlehem is just beautiful, and I'd really like to get it again, but I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, let me see what I can find out that might be available in the Lindsay area.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much. Just going back to Philip, I know yes. that he had a second question on his mind. You can always call back, Philip, okay?
I think his real question is, how come my phlox are deteriorating? They're worse every year.
But he had another question that I think he wanted to get in there. Yeah. He said, I've got a couple of questions. Oh, so I hopped off my my motorcycle.
Was that a horse or a motorcycle?
I had the ticket book right out there. Anyway, you can always call back. Now, there's...
What's the numbers?
The number, let me give you those. Yeah, in Toronto, 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning.
Hi, and Frank, hi. I've called before, and today I have problems with my zinnias. I start zinnias from seed. Mm-hmm. It's a long process. I put them out in the garden, mm-hmm. and I've used that formula for slugs to go around my hostas, mm-hmm. and the slugs are now getting at my zinnia flowers, and they're stripping them. So can I use that formula?
Okay, that was the formula, which was
the ammonia,
but that's designed to go on the soil.
I see.
Not on the foliage.
And you can't put that around the zinnia on the soil?
Yes, you could, but are you sure it's slugs that are chowing down on your zinnias and not earwigs?
I think it is. I'm not positive, but every one of them, it seems like it could be slugs. I don't know what else would chew on the leaves.
So, and this is happening at night, so you're not seeing anything.
Yes, it's at night, yeah.
Well, just based on the fact that it's so dry, okay, so we're into quite a droughty situation all across southern Ontario, well, all across Ontario, mm-hmm. I think, is, you know, fires are burning, et cetera. This is not slug weather. Remember last year when it rained, and I kept jokingly calling it the year of the slug, because there were slugs and snails everywhere last year, but the moisture levels were very high, which is the perfect environment for slugs and snails.
Yeah.
All this drought is not slug territory at all.
Well, I have a water system and it comes on very early in the morning.
Good point.
And that's what's keeping my flowers alive.
Right. So you're right. So you're all the slugs and snails in all of Toronto are in your garden, probably. Or anybody else's.
They're hitchhiking near your place.
Home for them. Yeah.
Because they heard there's irrigation at your place.
No, I've got good irrigation, and I even spray in the morning. I go around with my hose and give them an extra dose.
Okay. Well, so there's a thought. Don't be extra dosing anything. If you've got that irrigation system, just work with that. Don't be adding extra water.
Okay.
If you think it's slugs and or snails, there is a bait, and you can get this at any garden center. You can get it at a Home Depot, Canadian Tire, and it's like a little package. It says right on it, slug and snail bait.
Okay.
And there was one we used to use like 20 years ago that was quite a toxic bait, and it was poisonous to birds, etc.
Uh-huh.
And that's all gone. That is no longer available. What is now available is a very effective bait,
uh-huh.
but it is made out of iron and nitrogen.
Oh, yeah.
So what happens is the slugs and snails think it's pretty yummy. They eat it.
Uh-huh.
It's a stomach poison. It doesn't kill them right away,
uh-huh.
so they don't die right where they eat it. They crawl away and die somewhere in the corner, so you
uh-huh.
don't see them.
Uh-huh.
And what doesn't get eaten will slowly but surely dissolve. Now, that's where your irrigation is going to come on and cause this to all dissolve.
Uh-huh.
And once the bait dissolves, it actually feeds the plants because it is essential nutrient for the plant.
So it has to be wet.
Well, no, it does. Once it's wet, it's no longer effective as a bait.
Oh, it isn't.
Yeah. So your system is coming on what, every second night, every third night?
I think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So check
forgotten.
What nights it's coming on, and get that bait out. So say it comes on tonight. Say your irrigation comes on Saturday nights. So tomorrow morning or afternoon when things are dry, mm-hmm. you would go out and sprinkle this bait around your edible plants, your hostas, your zinnias, whatever's getting chewed on, and that bait will be quite effective until the next time the irrigation comes on.
Oh boy, I'm going to have to call the gentleman that put it in for me to find out exactly.
What the schedule is.
What time it? Well, I know it comes on in the very early in the morning, around 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you, yeah, call the gentleman and get him to come and give you some lessons on how to work the system, too, because it's very good and important to be able to run that yourself.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, I have, I bought slug and snail. Mm-hmm. It's granules. It's yellow. Is that the one?
Yeah, yep, that's true. I believe it is yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and I sprinkled it around, but I thought you had to have it wet. So no. I will, I'll figure what I can do.
Yeah, take a read on the package. It'll tell you that after a rain, you reapply because you don't want it. Wet is, the slugs won't eat it.
They won't eat it. Oh, my gracious. That's why
I'm
spending all this money for doing it the wrong way.
Okay.
There you go. Good thing you called.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We're bumping up to our next break here, Charlie, and we'll be back to talk to a gal. I haven't had words with Siva for a long while.
Oh, my.
Nice to welcome her back to the show. So that's coming up next on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, at 9:45, let's say good morning to Siva. Hi, Siva, welcome back.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good morning.
Good.
Okay, I have in my garden what looks like locusts. It's a gray-looking bug.
Mm.
I want to know if they're good bugs or bad bugs.
They look like a locust?
Yeah, they have long wings, and they're in the shape of a locust. I always get them, but I don't know if they're good or bad. I don't want to kill them if they're good.
And are they really, they're much smaller than a locust?
They're smaller than the locust, but they have the same shape, wings,
and the
same
back
looking
legs.
Head.
Okay. Are the wings really lacy, see-through?
Yes.
Yeah, they're good. They're called lace
bugs.
Wings.
Okay.
If you want to look it up, you can just look up lace wing.
Okay.
Which is the name of that insect.
Okay.
And I'm just bringing it up here quickly on my computer so Frank can see it.
I think
that's what you have. See
we
if
used
it
to
is.
Call them grasshoppers, but
well,
I don't know.
If it could be grasshoppers, like, and certainly grasshoppers, locusts look a lot the same.
Yeah.
So if they are grasshoppers, they are chewing on your plants because they are completely herbaceous. They'll eat everything. They're herbivores. They're
the
not
color
picky.
Is kind of gray like.
Yeah. So keep just watch them. You know what? When in doubt, watch them or. See if you can capture one and take a picture. Nice up close. What you do is you capture it in a jar, you stick it in the freezer. It'll become completely still if you freeze it. Then you take a nice close-up picture, and then you can thaw it and let it go. But send me that picture, and I can tell you what it is.
Okay, then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks,
you're
Eva.
Welcome.
Hey, that's an interesting little project. Wow.
You want to do that?
I didn't. Cryogenics, or was it?
Oh, you're right. Cryogenics.
Cryogenics, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Well, that's. It takes a while to kill an insect in a freezer. I mean, you can do it. Most of them
Mother
will
Nature
die
freezes
eventually.
Them all the time, right?
Right, but they don't always freeze as adults. Like, different insects overwinter in different forms. They could be eggs that overwinter, could be larvae, could be, you know.
Well.
Whatever. So, but it's a great way to take a photograph.
Yeah,
exactly. Because
you
slow them right down.
Sure
when they're cold, they aren't moving very fast.
Okay, we better get to Beth, who is on the line. Where are you calling from, Beth?
I'm calling from Guelph.
Alrighty.
Ontario.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to hear your show every Saturday, Charlie and Frank.
Nice.
Well, thank
First
you.
Time caller.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait a minute. Frank's not paying attention.
There we
so
are.
So I have an elderberry tree.
Yes.
It might be a bush, but it's a Moden Golden Glow.
Oh, nice, yep.
About 8 feet tall, 7 feet wide, and the leaves are starting to turn black.
Hmm. Has it ever done that before?
No.
So something's going on there. Black. I wonder why black. Now, it wouldn't have anything to do with lack of water, would it?
I have been watering it.
Mm-hmm. Watering the soil as opposed to the plant. Have you taken a really good look at you know, under the leaves for any kind of insects or bumps?
There looked like a spider web type of a thing on one of the branches.
Yeah, spiders in the garden actually can be very helpful. Like, but spider mites can be very detrimental. You don't see spider mites because they're so small, but you will see webbing on the underside of the leaves, which is where they live. They suck juices from underneath. So that's one of those things. With a magnifying glass, you can see better, or with the sun behind, you can see webbing on the backs of leaves. Then you would suspect something like spider mite. And spider mites love the hot, dry weather, so it's highly likely that we will see some outbreaks of spider mite on some of our ornamental plants. Regular spiders, don't worry about them at all. They're wonderful. They catch all kinds of nasty insects, so we like garden spiders. So it becomes a real bit of a puzzle for me to know for sure. Again, perhaps a photograph of these leaves, top and bottom, as focused and up close as you can get. Have you got berries coming on the elderberry?
No.
So it didn't flower this year?
No.
Okay. Hmm. And it has provided berries in the past?
Yes, it has.
Hmm. So something's going on. Now, elderberry loves moisture. So could just be having a tough time this year because of the dry conditions, perhaps?
Okay.
Last year, of course, it probably did very well. It liked all that moisture, I bet. It's one of those things. But Beth, consider maybe sending a photograph or taking a piece of the plant into one of your local garden centers. You've got some very smart people there in the Guelph area who might be able to provide a diagnosis with a piece of the
I'll
plant.
Do that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling.
Let me give Charlie's email so you can accomplish that, okay? It's c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Okay? And I'm sure that that'll be a very interesting shot to have Charlie take a look at. We have to take another break here, and coming back to say hi to John in Markham here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, let's head on out. Oh, sorry, you wanted to quickly mention something.
Before we go anywhere. Okay, so Sandra called from Lindsay, and she was sad that she had lost her Italian bellflower, also known as Star of Bethlehem.
Uh-huh.
Those are two common names. The proper name that we are looking for, it's Campanula. All the bellflowers are Campanula. So C-A-M-P as in Paul, A-N-U-L-A. Now, the species she's looking for is, and I hope you're listening because you're going to have to do this for yourself, Sandra. So Campanula, the species is called Isophylla. So I-S as in Sam, O, and then phyla, P-H-Y-L-L-A. So Campanula, Isophylla, you're right. There's not, I'm looking here, there's a lot of Campanulas for sale, but there's not a lot of that particular plant, seeds or plants for sale that I can see on a 2-minute, 3-minute search of the web.
Yeah, been going at it pretty hot and heavy there.
Yeah, so Sandra, I'm gonna throw that back at you. There's your proper name, Campanula Isophylla. That's what you're looking for seeds of, and I'll let you source it out.
All right.
Okay, good
there
luck with that.
Okay, off to Markham. There's John. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you folks, okay?
Good.
Excellent.
Back to Maureen, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw the email about I like my plants bigger and better, but somehow I was interested in this note that apparently you can use Epsom salt on plants like rhododendrons and dahlias and actually all plants and all vegetables, but 1 tablespoon per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you ever heard of this before?
I have heard of it. I can tell you that, do you have access to the internet?
Yes.
Okay. So the Epsom Salt Council is, if you just Google Epsom Salt and go to, I think the website is epsomsalt.org. It's quite a good website. It tells you all the wonderful things that Epsom salts do. So you go to the gardening section, and then it will actually list quantities of Epsom salt with or without water on which plants?
So many people just a regular Epsom salt used for my feet then.
Yeah, same stuff that you buy at Shoppers Drug Mart. Yep. Yeah, so, no, Epsom salts are quite magical that way. But what it is, it's magnesium and sulfur. So
would I get bigger flowers on my dahlias? Dahlias is my favorite flower.
You might. It depends whether your soil is lacking in magnesium or sulfur, because that's what Epsom salts
are. For example, where I was born, we call it plate dahlias.
Oh,
back in Holland.
Oh, yeah.
And here we've got saucer dahlias.
That's right. Well, the dinner plate dahlias are the massive
huge
ones.
Yes.
All the big steaks required to hold them up, and you love them, do you? That's great.
Yes. But is that because of the climate, I suppose? We don't get that here.
Yes. I've seen them grow huge in Vancouver, but not here as much, no.
So it's not my soil is the moisture, the humidity.
In Markham, you're in pure clay, so I hope that you've amended your soil a lot.
Lay out first.
Good, yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, you
so
need
there's
to.
There's nothing I can do right now but try that, and I'd like to try that.
Yeah, try that, but I think the Epsom salt is more of a spring or early summer amendment,
okay,
just to bang in that extra nutrient. But
I should not bother right now. They haven't bloomed yet, so.
Yeah, I would be careful of any fertilizing when it's this hot and this dry.
I'm new, so I better ask you more questions next time.
Okay,
all right.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thanks a lot,
for
John.
Your help.
All right, our pleasure.
Day. Thanks for being with us here.
Yeah, I like it when people aren't afraid to call.
One final caller we can kind of squeeze in.
You think?
Caroline in Hamilton.
Sure.
Caroline, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Love your show.
Thank you.
I have to make it quick, but some advice or some telling signs for Beth, who called in about her black leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's possibly the extreme heat and sun, because my Crassula argentea, or jade plant, when they get too much sun, the leaves turn yellow, and they're of the succulent variety.
Yes.
So, but my question is, I have a cucumber plant. I'm in an apartment. The plants are growing on a balcony in a pot, where they're protected.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the leaves are going yellow to white, and they're getting water and enough sun, probably too much heat.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed three black spiders I've never seen before, like arthropods, and they looked like spider mites. And I thought, maybe that's why my leaves are, their baby cucumbers are turning yellow, the leaves, and turning to white and then going crispy. And so I planted the seedlings on April 28th, and the cucumbers, I don't know if it's me or the fertilizer, like it's a pro mix for, it's organic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has fertilizer in it.
Right, but it's only
it's
a tiny
GHA 297.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as Mycorrhizae glomus intradeces. So I figured that would be okay, but the cucumbers are still very narrow, and they're not growing with water. Like, I don't know. It's my first time doing this.
Yeah. So good question. Thanks for calling, Caroline. Couple of things. Cucumbers are very susceptible to a beetle, so you have to be careful that you don't have any cucumber beetles anywhere early in the season, particularly on the plant. Cucumbers, because of the height of the plant, need quite a deep container. So I hope that you've got a container that's at least, you know, 2 feet, even deeper, to get those roots down and hold that moisture.
Yep.
And don't be afraid to fertilize, because you're right. Promix potting soils come with a tiny bit of a nutrient charge, but do need to be fertilized as the season goes on. And we're at a racetrack.
Yeah, son of a gun.
Thanks, everybody.
Wow.
See y'all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.